Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, I encourage you to subscribe. And also, if you would, please write a review. We've got some great guests that we have lined up for the coming year. We're going to take a couple weeks to revisit some of our conversations this past year. And this week, we're going to be listening to our conversation with Heather Simonson. Heather is a CEO and board member. She is currently the CEO of Boomerang Medical. And she has been recognized as one of the executives to watch in the med tech space. She has had numerous leadership roles in her career, and she's learned some great lessons that she's going to share with us today. Looking forward to today's conversation with Heather. And it's great to have Heather joining us for our conversation, and appreciate you taking time out of your schedule.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking about your friends behind you a little bit later. we'll keep everybody wondering.
So, fantastic.
And those that are just listening, you'll have to look at the video version of this. So anyway, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your background? I'd love to hear kind of how you've gotten to where you are today.
Absolutely. And I was actually thinking about this a couple of weeks ago. My career, which has been about 30 years, almost every single job that I've gotten has been due to my network. And even starting with the beginning. So I'll go there and try to go very, very fast through it. So I graduated from undergrad with a political science degree. I absolutely love history, certainly the especially the history of politics. And I went to work for a state senator in Illinois who was based on the North Shore of Chicago. He was in office for about 16 years, and I went in as a campaign aide. It was a really cool experience for somebody my age because he had heavy hitters involved in his campaign. For example, the finance chairman was Don Rumsfeld. I mean, it was just a who's who of either big Chicago business or big politics. And I'm kind of a young punk coming in and basically handing out flyers at 6 a.m. to the commuters on the train station. So, and that was a fantastic experience because I got to do some, you know, network with some amazing people, and then also do some incredible events. I coordinated the governor of Illinois flying in on a helicopter to help with a campaign rally. Now, unfortunately, my boss lost his seat, so he went back into work, and I was thinking, well, what am I going to do next? One of the people involved in the campaign who I'd gotten to know was the general counsel of Baxter. So he said, Would you like to come talk to Baxter? And I said, sure. Who do you want to talk to? I said, I have absolutely no idea. So that was my first healthcare job. That's how I actually got into healthcare. And I went in as kind of doing inside sales customer service and thought that the marketing people looked kind of cool in what they were doing. So I started talking to people in marketing saying, hey, what do I need to do? And pretty much it was, you got to have an MBA or else there's no real opportunity. So I applied to business school, started business school at night. Through one of those people in the marketing group, I actually had an opportunity to go into my first marketing job, which was a marketing analyst at Lake Forest Hospital outside of Chicago. So I actually went and did basically hospital market analysis within the business development department for Lake Forest Hospital. And then I graduated to a larger healthcare system in Chicago proper. And that was, I think that was my first inkling that I actually was good with numbers. And that'll go to some of my my thoughts on earlier career people and people that I mentor. Meanwhile, I'm going to business school at night. Through business school, I had a colleague and we would work until 4 a.m. on projects, and we were both kind of wired a little similarly. And so as we were nearing kind of our last year or so, he said, "Hey, I want you to come work for me. I'm starting up a consulting business within CNA Insurance." And I said, "Okay." And the focus was risk management consulting. And I said, "I have absolutely no idea what that is." But he said, "Don't worry, I'll teach you. I need a hard worker who's quick and can pick up things." And so that was, I spent the next several years doing management consulting under the umbrella of CNA Insurance. And again, focused on healthcare. So on risk management of healthcare. In there, I actually co-authored quite a few papers, but actually a chapter in a legal textbook called Reengineering Healthcare Liability Litigation. I never thought I would have, when my career path would lead me there. Sure. And then I had the opportunity to move to California. The company said, "Hey, we want you to stay with us, just work from there." And so I moved to San Francisco, and I loved what I was doing, but I was very lonely not having a company, you know, and colleagues to go to, because I didn't know anybody in San Francisco. So that then set me on the path of medical technology. And I ended up working for a medical a diagnostics company called Celestech. And then from there went smaller. It was kind of a small cap company, then went smaller and did my first startup called Access Closure with an amazing entrepreneur named Fred Khosravi. I think I was employee number 30 there. I worked with, kind of stayed with Fred companies for several years. So I worked on a couple of his ventures, and then that, I recognized at that point there was a gap that I wanted to fill in terms of my experience. And that was really working for a large enterprise, a really large enterprise. And so an opportunity came up for me, and I went to Abbott Vascular. So kind of increasing responsibilities. And so did a few tours of duty in the big companies, loved it, and said, "But I really love startups." And so that then kind of boomeranged me back into the venture funded startup world. Before I took over Boomerang, I was running a company, called PQ Bypass. And, let's see, I was there for the previous 5 years before joining Boomerang as, essentially started off as vice president of marketing and moved to general manager. So I was running general manager and president. So I was running the day-to-day operations, working for an amazing mentor named Rich Ferrari. And so I was very lucky on a lot of fronts and just had a great time. And then we sold PQ Bypass in April of 2021. And I got a call from Andrew Cleland at Fogarty Innovation, who said, "Hey, I need somebody to run a company that's just coming out of the gates, and I think you'd be a great fit." So I talked to the investors and other people who had kind of come up with the early idea, and so took over the company as CEO about a year and a half ago. I was the first employee. No. Which was the first time in my career that I've had that situation. And so I started my first day and I thought, well, I guess we need email. I mean, that early. And so very quickly brought on a head of finance and HR, which is really always, you know, your first hire to help you navigate as a CEO, navigate those early processes for setting up an enterprise, and then started hiring my core team. So okay. That brings me to today.
Yeah. Well, that's a journey. So a lot of different stops, and as most people, they don't start out in their career, and what they end up in is a lot of times a different directions. That's a great story. I ask this question most every guest, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give a 22-year-old Heather?
Number one, take a gap year. So that is something that I always wished that I had recognized at the time that I actually had time to do that. But I was very worried about, I've got to get into the job market and then get experience. But I do think that it gives the opportunity for people to develop a broader vision and a broader perspective, a more global perspective, particularly if you can travel and volunteer somewhere overseas. Number two, I would say don't go to business school until you have a little more business experience. I think I was 24 when I started business school, and there were so many things that were just purely academic at that point because I had no business experience. And so I would say, it was an incredible experience, but I would say I'd wait a little bit longer. I think that the other two things, number one would be cultivate your network. So my career, it has been, hey, Heather, come do this for me, or I know someone who's looking for what you are good at. And that's something that is incredibly important, and it's incredibly to start early. And then finally, finance. So this is something I tell earlier career people. I tell my new executives, learn the numbers, understand what the numbers mean, because so much of what you do, needs to be data driven. I mean, there's a lot of gray area that you work in a leader, but numbers don't lie, and numbers can help you set strategy, which I've turned to frequently. And that kind of goes back to my early experience as a market analyst. I was using data to understand trends.
What do you wish you would have known before you became a CEO? Anything that you look back on and say, because we have a lot of new leaders or new CEOs that listen to the podcast, what would you tell them?
So I was in a very, very lucky position that I had basically 5 years working under Rich Ferrari, and he gave me the opportunity to really it was kind of my CEO training wheels I was able to operate in that function and have him when there were just things that were brand new to me that I hadn't encountered. So that was great. But in thinking about what are some of the tenets that I would say, number one is, and this understand how to work with a board of directors and what the purpose of a board of directors, what the purpose is. A board is not an entity, so to speak. It is a group of human beings. So there's no one size fits all for board management. It depends on the individuals that you have on the board and the stage of the company and the issues that you're dealing with. So I try to make a point to understand each of the board members, what their hot spots are, right? What concerns them? Because some are concerned about something that others aren't. And I need to be able to understand those concerns and incorporate them if relevant into the business, but then also from a communication standpoint, because cognitive processing is individual. Everybody doesn't process the same way. So I think that, for example, we just had our first quarter board meeting and we didn't do slides. I said, no slides. There's too much going on. What we're doing is a narrative with background information, data, what's going on with the business, and sent that as a pre-read. There were no slides. And it was fantastic because it was the vehicle that we needed to communicate with at this particular juncture. There's so much going on with the business that you just couldn't capture it in slides. So I think that's number one. Number two is, again, to the network. As a CEO, you operate, as I said, in gray area, and you don't really have someone to say, hey, how do I do this? So I, and this is something I tell new CEOs, I tell my new executives, you have to cultivate your informal network. of experts, because there's going to be decisions that you have to make. In fact, most of the decisions that you have to make, you're not the expert, right? You're the expert in general management. You're not the expert in regulatory, in clinical, et cetera. And so I view what I've tried to do over the past 10 years or so is really cultivate people who are true experts. So if I have a given issue, I'll talk to a few people and just kind of ask the same question and then try to synthesize the advice. So
I think one thing that early stage CEOs probably don't understand until they get into the role is that fundraising is a part of the job. The title you need to create as far as opportunities for new funding, and I know you've gone through that yourself. Anything you can talk about that as far as just what you've learned around that subject?
So I've been involved in fundraising. I would say the first time was about 2002.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy to think about. But helping CEOs, and then as a company leader, you know, then eventually as a company leader. So number one, you're always fundraising, right? You may not always be pitching, but right. Your investors, in my case, Arboretum led my seed round, and they along with Hatteras led my Series A. So they were in, which is a great vote of confidence in the team that's there and in the what we're trying to do. So that is probably one of the key things, because you don't need money today, but you're right. Going to need money, and you don't want to start cultivating the story, the progress, et cetera, when you need the money. You want to do it in process. I think also it is, we're seeing more female driven or led investor groups, venture groups, which is I think very encouraging in the med tech sector. I haven't experienced yet, at least to my knowledge, any big difference being a woman going in and pitching. I mean, you've got to have a good story. You've got to be able to tell your story. You've got to be able to keep the attention of these very, very busy and oversubscribed investors. And you have to learn how to get your points across pretty quickly. So
every leader continues to learn and develop and grow. Is there any books that you recommend to your team, your executive team, or others that you mentor?
Yes. Yes, there are the number one book I recommend is The First 90 Days. And that's Michael Watkins. It was a book that was introduced to maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 years into my career. And I said, how come I didn't know about this ahead of time? And this is something, I mean, I've actually given assignments to my teams for like almost a book club to go through the book, because the premise of the book is what got you here isn't going to get you there. And particularly as you advance in leadership, you have to, what people do, the natural instinct is you draw on the areas that you know and that you're strong. And those aren't the skills that are going to make you successful, particularly as you move into more general management roles. So that's really kind of the number one book. My more recent book is called CEO Excellence, which came out of McKinsey. And it's funny, I was on a plane on a business trip about a month ago, and the guy sitting next to me said, you may have seen me taking a picture of that book on your on your table. He said, my friends wrote that. He was a McKinsey consultant and good friends with the authors. But that one is also fantastic. So
yeah, I agree. I just had somebody send that book to me recently, and I agree, definitely worthwhile.
Yes.
Outside of work, we're finally getting to the question that's going to answer what's behind you.
Okay.
Outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Well, so this is another thing that I when I mentor people that I try to impart every year, I try to do something that is completely outside of my professional world and what I need to read about or think about professionally. For example, when my daughter was in grade school, to kind of force me to carve some dedicated time with her, I participated in a program called Music for Minors, which trains people how to be essentially music docents. And so you get a certificate for K through third grade to teach music. And so as a volunteer docent, so I would go into her school once a week and I would teach a class. I did first grade and second grade, teach a class, a music class to 6 and 7 year olds. Now, that's super. It was fun and fulfilling, and I got to be my daughter's teacher. However, what it ended up doing for me, which I didn't realize, it basically took my presentation skills to atmospheric level. I would say I was not a great presenter prior to that. But when you have to stand up in front of a group of people and sing and keep the attention for a half hour of 6 and 7 year olds, and make sure that none of them, they're rolling on the floor and kind of keep them engaged, you're forced to become a better presenter. And so that has helped me in my career ever since. I don't sing in front of any of my professionals, but I certainly am able to keep a boardroom full of venture capitalists engaged. So that is the other thing that I did that I also recommend to people, and this is something I would recommend to my 22-year-old self, take an improv class. So that was my 1 year I did. And why that is so incredibly important, it works that part of your brain that forces you to be very present to what the person next to you is saying. Because in improv, you cannot let your mind wander. You've got to pay very, very good attention to basically key off what the other person is doing. And again, that is something that helped me tremendously in business. Not by design, it just happens. So I really encourage people to make sure you're exercising a different part of your brain, and there will be some nice benefits. Now, bringing us a little bit up to date, the friends in back of me are my Leon burgers. So they, Martha and Ham, 2 M's. Ham. So, and these guys are, they're just a joy. I was never a dog person, was never interested in dogs. And then I was introduced to this breed and I have done a complete 180. So they keep me very occupied and entertained. And I have just really kind of gone in feet first into training and of the dogs and the psychology and the behavior. And it's a blast. And you kind of have to do that because my girl, Martha, is 180 pounds.
Wow.
Ham is the little one. He's 150. So that's a lot of dog. And so you really have to be very responsible in how you groom these magnificent creatures to be part of, be part of the world.
Yeah. When we came on, I asked if you were raising lions because they've got great hair, and especially the one standing up, you can't see the face, but
you can see her mane. Well, the breed originated in the 1800s in Leonberg, Germany, and they were bred to look like lions. And so they're really, really wonderful breed, not too common in the US, but just fantastic. So,
yeah. Well, and I'm sure they think they're lap dogs. They probably try to get up in your lap, and a lot of times big dogs have that that tendency. So what parting advice would you give somebody who has maybe just been tapped on the shoulder and saying, you know, you're going to lead your first team? What would you tell them?
If building a team, take a step back and almost bubble diagram what the business needs and really think about. And I do this, I actually do this a lot myself, and think about, all right, what does my business need immediately? What does my business need over the next year or so? You know, in startups, we're not looking 4 years out necessarily. Right. We're not planning for that. We're planning for more of an acute basis. And then start thinking about the people afterwards. So that helps a lot, because sometimes you can get a little bit biased if you have a person and you know what they can do, but you have to always make sure, okay, but is that what my business needs right now? The other piece of advice, this is a mistake I see leaders do a lot. Don't throw people at the problem without evaluating your current resources first. So, for example, I've seen leaders kind of say, oh, this isn't working, I need to hire this in. Well, do you really need to hire that in? Or do you have a process issue that you need to re-engineer, right? Are you deploying the resources that you have in the most effective way? Okay. And so if the answer to both of those is, you know, it points toward bringing on a new hire, then great. But what happens often is that, oh, there's a problem, so I'm going to bring somebody else in, and then but that doesn't fix the underlying problem. And that's particularly critical in the startup where, you know, you have a certain amount of money where you have to achieve certain milestones. There's not revenue coming in the early stages. And so you've got to be very, very careful about how you actually take on fixed burn. So those would be two of the key things. And then also just keep up with the networking organizations, the different industry organizations. Those to me have been they're incredible. They have been over my career. They are now.
Definitely wish you continued success in your at Boomerang, and definitely look forward to seeing how you continue to grow and develop your business, and appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.